Welcome to the Script and Style Show, the web show where we talk about web development with the people that make it happen. Today's episode is brought to you by TrackJS JavaScript Error Monitoring. Know when errors hit your website with the context to find and fix bugs fast with TrackJS. Start your free trial today at TrackJS.com.
Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. This is episode 0 of the Script and Style podcast. I'm David Walsh.
And I'm Todd Gardner.
And within this first episode, we just want to talk a little bit about why we're starting this, what we hope to accomplish with it. We're going to move into our main topic, which tonight is going to be... career paths. And then we'll end it. But I wanted to start out, Todd, by asking you how your London trip went. You went for a conference, right?
Yeah. I was in London or the UK for a couple of weeks. I visited Manchester earlier or middle of January or so and did a user group up there. That was super fun. I did a conference called NDC London, which was right across the street from Westminster Abbey, which was pretty sweet. And through a pub comedy conference there as well. It was a great time. We had a lot of fun.
Did you get to visit any places that you were really looking forward to?
So I've been fortunate enough that I've gotten to visit London a few times for this conference. So I didn't really do a whole lot of sightseeing this time, but the walking path between the hotel and the conference center actually had Buckingham Palace like right between them. So that was kind of cool to like walk by that every day. And occasionally there'd be like military helicopters parked behind it and then they would be gone and be like, that's pretty cool. It's probably like the Queen probably took that helicopter.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Buckingham Palace is beautiful, man. All right. So we got to tell people why we're doing this, right? Like, why are we throwing ourselves into the fray of podcasting? There are a couple things that I hope to accomplish with it. And I know you've been on the same page, which is why I think this is going to work out really well. The first thing that I wanted to accomplish with this is that, you know, I write blog posts and everybody writes blog posts about the technical side of web development. But I've realized what makes the biggest impressions on me are the people that I work with, the people who contribute to projects, the people that are out there. And it really came through to me the last time that we went to a Mozilla All Hands, where, you know, the company sends us the entire company to, you know, one location, fly everybody in. And I noticed that I wasn't really asking people about what they were working on. I was asking people more so about how they were doing. You know, I was looking forward to seeing them. So I want to touch on the human aspect of web development a little bit more.
I agree. Like the when I go to speak at a conference, the best things I always take away from it aren't something I learned in a talk or anything like that. It's always the hallway track or the after party or like the people you met. That's the things that really, really excite you about stuff that we're going to work on. It's not always the tech. It's a lot of the times it's the people.
Exactly. That being said, I do want to talk about new APIs, whether it's JavaScript or CSS or, you know, Node.js specifically. I do want to get into APIs and the tech part of things because, again, that's what we're all doing in this industry, right? So those are the first two things that come to mind. How about you, Todd?
Yeah, I like both of those. What I think is going to be interesting is I like to balance talking about what's new and happening on the forefront of web technologies with what's actually maintainable. I think often that conversation is very one-sided of like always pushing to what's next and what's coming. And we tend to kind of leave a graveyard of half-built, half-maintained apps in our wake. And so I want to talk a little bit or bring a perspective of how do we build things that can survive in the long term and really add value.
Excellent. And then lastly, I do want to bring on people that I've met in the industry. I've been lucky enough to, you know, become friends with people like Chris Coyer and a lot of the people at Mozilla and make a lot of connections. And I think that it would be really awesome to get them on here, put them on the hot seat, and ask them questions about stuff that they've been doing or just their general opinions on where things are going in the industry. So I really look forward to that.
I hope it's not so much of a hot seat. Let's not grill our guests.
We're grilling everybody. but in this first one, I want to talk about career paths, right? I think it'll be a really good introduction to who, you know, you and I are, because we should probably qualify ourselves.
Why does anybody want to waste their time watching our podcasts? That's what we need to qualify. Like, who the heck are we? Why do we need to be doing this?
Exactly. But I think that these journeys are all, you know, really filled with a bit of luck, a lot of hard work, and people giving us a chance, taking a chance on us to succeed, and us hopefully paying it back. So that's where I want to start out, you know, this first podcast. So would you like to go first, or should I?
Oh, you go for it, man.
I'll go first. Okay, so how did I get here? It's crazy. I have no idea how I've gotten here. I shouldn't have gotten here, but somehow I did. So web development for me became a passion when I was 14. And I was sitting in keyboarding class, probably not doing what I was supposed to, probably playing Grand Theft Auto or something when the teacher wasn't watching. And my classmate like bumped me and said, "Hey, check this out." And it was a really simple website on GeoCities about Pulp Fiction. Now, but keep in mind, this was 20 years ago. I'm 34 now. So, you know, that was the hot thing. And GeoCities was awesome. But like, I couldn't believe when I asked him who put this site together. He's like, "I did." And I was like, "I thought you needed to be this like uber computer geek to put together some sort of web page, right?" And he's like, "No, check it out." And I looked at the code and I was like, "Oh my God, I need to do this. I don't know what this is, but I need to be doing it." And so this was toward the end of the school year. And I went to the computer lab and I printed out like hundreds of pages on like how to create a table, how to do this with CSS, like basic JavaScript stuff. And I just became obsessed with it, did it all summer. And I sort of like casually kept working on web stuff, you know, throughout my high school experience. So you can tell I was like a real social guy in high school. But then I moved on to like a local tech college. I didn't go to a big college, just a local tech college. And I got my associate's degree. And part of that really sort of spurred me on was I was a lab assistant for a while, which was really nice because you earn a little bit of money and you can get all of your homework done when people aren't asking you questions, right? So it was in that computer lab where I fell in love with Firefox, which was then called Firebird.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, the reason I loved it so much was that they had developer tools. Like there were tools in it that helped, like they cared about us, you know? It wasn't like Vue Source and then Notepad popped up with a bunch of garbled text, right?
Hey, don't knock Notepad. Notepad's awesome.
it's not for web debugging, right? A raw source dump isn't super helpful. But like you could tell that they cared. These features were there. And there was like a little part of me that said, "I need to make it to Mozilla one day." Like that is what I wanted to do. That is where I wanted to be. I wanted to be with people who cared about like people like me trying to get things done on the web. So I graduated from there. I, you know, sort of wasted 2 years getting my bachelor's degree somewhere else. And then I got my first job in the industry at like a small print shop that was just starting a web department. And I learned more in the first week there than I did in all of my schooling, right? Like I left that tech school not knowing how to do anything but table layouts. Like, think of how crazy that is right now. Everything we do with like CSS floats, and now we have grid and flexbox. I didn't know about floats, man. And this was still when like IE6 was popular. So I learned a ton about CSS hacks, JavaScript hacks. But I just wasn't super satisfied with what I was doing. And that led me to starting my blog. Through my blog, I was able to experiment, meet people, share stuff that I found on like page 8 of a web forum that helped me fix this weird problem that I was having. And you know, from there I found Mootools, and that was life-changing for me, right? Because I started writing about Mootools, which led to the Mootools team member, Aaron Newton, asking me to join the team. And that was like unbelievable for me. It's not something that I had set out to do, but just that sort of recognition was the first time in my career that I realized how powerful open source could be. Not just that you get like free code that you can add to a website, but there was a community there that was going to teach you, that was going to push you, that was going to challenge you. And from there, Ray Bango, who was actually on the jQuery team, do you remember the JavaScript wars of the early days where, you know, like jQuery is better, Mootools is better?
Oh, yeah.
Like, do you remember those conversations?
I remember those.
Oddly enough, it was him.
He started it. He had the first shot in the JavaScript wars.
Listen, Ray would beat me up if he heard me say that. None of us were innocent. But it was just funny because it was a jQuery team member that introduced a Mootools team member, me, to the founder of the Dojo Toolkit to get a job at SitePen. And this was really a case of, you know, Ray didn't have to do that for me. And Dylan from SitePen didn't have to offer me a job, right? But it like just luck turned out and they took a chance on me. And I started working remotely, which was a big change. I started working in hardcore JavaScript. And I learned a ton focusing on that in the Dojo Toolkit. And I started working remotely. And working remotely, you know, as you know, is like a huge sort of life change, right? And I think that we should have an episode in the future dedicated to working remotely and the pitfalls and
absolutely
tips. But I did that for 2 years. And then Mike Morgan, speaking of another person that didn't need to take a chance on me, who was like the web engineering director at Mozilla at the time, he asked me to join Mozilla. And I couldn't believe it. Again, like I still had this internal small town boy from the Midwest. You're from the Midwest, so I'm not going to knock the Midwest. But like you don't think of it as a tech hub, right? And I didn't go to the best college and that. And it's really sort of been a lesson in...
No, but you are the author of this giant blog that everybody goes to. Like,
but it wasn't
you're totally like personifying that imposter syndrome post that you wrote a while ago. Like right now you're doing that.
We should see, now you're grilling me.
Hey, you said it was a hot seat, man. I'm putting you in the hot seat.
It is now. but yeah, we'll have an episode about imposter syndrome. But like back to the story. Like 5, 6, 7 years of really busting my butt and spending my free time on open source took me from the smallest of web shops to one of the best like web coding organizations in the world. And so that sort of dream I had when I was 18 sitting in that lab came to fruition. And not just that, I got to work on stuff I was really passionate about. At Mozilla, I've gotten to work on MDN. I've been able to work on Firefox OS, Firefox OS TV. I've been able to work with the Wadi team, the marketplace team. I've been able to, you know, be there to help out toward the beginning of Mozilla's web VR effort. And just this month, as I have a blog post on my, you know, front page of my site right now, I got to join the DevTools team at Mozilla. So like, it's really come full circle from me being, you know, in the lab tinkering away and, you know, loving Mozilla because they gave me these tools and now I get to work on them. And like, it's fucking crazy, man. I cannot believe that like, this is like that I'm here.
Yeah. Now you're in a situation where you're like multiplying your efforts. You're enabling that next generation of people who is popping open their dev console for the first time.
Yeah, I hope so. I want to make people's, you know, lives and dev tools better. And I get the opportunity to do that, right? And I couldn't be more excited. And I wish I could have 5 minutes with that 18-year-old me and be like, dude, like, you're going to fucking make it, man. You're like, you're going to get there. And that's like, for me, like, that's been my journey. And of course, I'm 34, so like, I'm not even halfway into it, right? But I really want people to listen to my story and not think that they can't do the same thing. Because as long as you put in the work and effort, you're going to get that chance one day. So that's my story. Hopefully it wasn't boring, but like, that's how I've gotten here, man. That's how I'm here.
No, that's awesome. That's really inspiring that like, just by throwing yourself out there and continuing to work, you've worked yourself from this path of just learning through the tools and communities that existed to contributing back to those communities and back to those tools. That's really cool.
It's been a lot of hard work. I remember my friends would be partying downstairs and I'd be like thinking around with CSS, like, why doesn't this work? You know, I've lightened up a little bit since then.
Oh, but, good.
Thank you. But it's not been easy, you know. But what about your story? How did you get to be the founder of this awesome, you know, JavaScript error reporting service?
Oh, there's a couple of different parts of that story, I think. So the first one that kind of goes along with your like origin story is when I was in junior high school, I was not really into computers at all. My parents had bought me one. I'd played a few video games on it, but like I wasn't particularly interested in programming it at the time. But around about the junior high school time, I started getting really into networked video games. So I started playing a lot of Duke Nukem and Doom and Warcraft 1. Not Warcraft 2, like Warcraft 1, Orcs and Humans, where you had to build roads to connect everything. I'm totally dating myself on that one. But so I wanted to figure out a way to like network these things together. I just had one computer at my house. And so if I wanted to like do this, I needed to like get, you know, some of my buddies to bring their computers over to my house so that we could like play a game. And that was a bit of a hard sell at that point when you're asking to bring the family's $3,000 computer over to Todd's basement so that we could play some video games. But my school had decided to upgrade its computer lab and had thrown away all of their old equipment. And so a buddy of mine and I dumpster dove into that equipment and were able to piece together three working computers from all of those old parts.
How old are you at this time?
I must have been 13 or 14.
And you're reaching into computers and like putting the parts together? And
yeah, yes. But I didn't know, like I had a basic understanding of like what parts were what. But I didn't know how to test anything, right? So I was like figuring out how to take an Intel 486 DX processor out of a motherboard and like swapping them around. And just like, it was purely trial and error of doing this combination of the system board with a hard drive, with some memory, with a processor, turn it on and see if it turned on. And if it didn't, I'd replace parts, like just going through parts like that to see if I could get something to work. And we were able to get three working machines, which was fun.
That's impressive. I don't think I could do that right now.
Well, I had a lot of time to kill at this point. Like I didn't particularly enjoy my schoolwork and I didn't really have a whole lot else going on at the time, other than, you know, play with computers. So we got these things set up and we built a little network so that they could all talk to each other. Now, this was before an Ethernet network. So this was a token ring network, whereas essentially it was a coax cable that went from computer to computer in a big loop. And if any of the computers weren't on or weren't configured right, the whole thing didn't work. And so the whole thing was like super fragile. But it was through this experience that was like my first time like getting into the mechanics of how did the computers work? What was enabling this thing that allowed me to play video games? From that point, I really just got really deep into video games and I didn't, I probably didn't try as hard as I should have for a long time. I started my first company around playing video games, actually. I started a LAN party, which in college, where I would get, you know, big tech companies to give us parts to, you know, as part of their advertising. So like I had Intel and AMD and NVIDIA and an energy drink company called Balls. I don't know if they're still around, but it's B-A-W-L-S. They would all sponsor me and send me like gear and drinks and swag and stickers and all kinds of stuff every month for me to like give away at this LAN party. And that was pretty fun. But it was in college. I went to a smaller school. I went to the University of Minnesota or Minnesota State University, Mankato, as it's now called. Which is a smaller state school. I got a computer science degree. But what I really learned from that experience was I'd also gotten a job at the university itself. I worked in the networking group. So I ran network cables all over that building. Whenever somebody needed a new computer hooked up, I had to, you know, fish cables for 100 yards from a network closet. Got to see what the insides and underneaths of all kinds of the old buildings looked like, which was kind of fun. But that's where I actually learned about computers was through work, was through building things for their IT department. So when I got out of school, I really didn't go into software development. I went into IT. I was a Windows and Linux network administrator coming out of school, which was largely just because it was easy. And I wanted to play video games. That's where I wanted to put my time.
So what games are we talking about at this point?
Oh, at this point. Well, this story to date has gone over like maybe a 10-year time frame, 10, 15-year time frame. And so it started with Warcraft 1, went on to Warcraft 2, went on to Starcraft. I probably peaked in that kind of genre of game around Starcraft. There was early Battle.net, which was their network platform, had come out for StarCraft. And so I had played in that a bunch, and I felt like I was pretty good. I was one of those people who like could win matches really, really fast, and the other person was super angry at me for doing it. When I got onto college, I switched to first-person shooters, and so I played a lot of Counter-Strike. I played Counter-Strike from the original mod from about Beta 4 on. And I was also one of those people who would shoot you from like really far away with an AK-47, and people would accuse me of cheating. For the record, I never, ever have cheated at a video game ever, ever.
You don't look at the other person's screen in Mario Kart?
Is that cheating?
And
is that typing in a cheat code?
Well, I mean, I do it too.
Okay, let me qualify it. For an online video game that I'm playing with other people, I have never been one of those people that entered in cheat code or not, but got the cheat mods to see through walls or whatever. But so it was through this company that I was working for as an IT administrator that they actually put a lot of trust in me, and I got to kind of do what I wanted there. And kind of like take my career where I wanted it to go. And so I would start solving these problems there with code. So people would come to me and be like, hey, we need to do this security audit. Can you tell us how many, credit card numbers are on the company-wide shared drive? We really should make sure there aren't any there. And so I'd have to be like, all right, how do I figure this out? I have to crawl over all these documents and look for this pattern and stuff like that. And I thought solving those kind of problems were a lot of fun. And so over time, I kind of moved myself into this role where I was a software developer there, even though that wasn't what my title was. I was kind of like the ad hoc, I need to solve internal problems with software. Eventually, I moved to officially become a software developer there. And got to, you know, use more better tooling and languages and stuff like that. And that was really cool. That company, you know, kind of set me up to do it. eventually became time to leave. I felt like I'd outgrown it. I needed to learn some new things. And so it was a very common career path, at least where I'm from in the Minneapolis, St. Paul area, is to become a consultant. And so I had a fantastic mentor who helped me set up my own business, become a limited liability company onto myself, and find my first client for me. And I became a consultant to go off and learn stuff. And it was really through consulting that I started doing a lot of JavaScript. I'd primarily been a C-sharp developer before this, working in the Microsoft kind of set of tools. But a bunch of clients around the time of the Backbone versus Knockout, JavaScript Renaissance period, started wanting to build single page applications. Often they shouldn't have built a single page application. They just wanted to because it was cool. But a lot of these clients ended up, essentially paying me to learn how to do this because that's what they really wanted to do. And so that was great. I got to do that. I got to build a bunch of big JavaScript apps and then see the problems that they ran into and how that worked. The problem that I would see is that JavaScript kind of sucks sometimes, and it blows up in kinds of ways that you don't always understand. And so we built an error monitoring subsystem for this one company. And then I'd go on to another client and I'd have to do it again because, hey, JavaScript broke for them too. And so after we'd done that a few times, we kind of realized that, hey, this is a thing that everybody needs. We should really build a JavaScript service or error monitoring service once. And so myself and a couple of partners constructed that about four and a half years ago at this point, and built it up kind of nights and weekends. We've done this kind of ourselves to scratch our own itch, to understand more about how JavaScript breaks. And kind of one of the things that was important about doing that is that maintainability of JavaScript, is that when you build something, I want it to still be there, to still be adding value, to still be like helping somebody do something years from now. I don't want it to be like a discarded app that the next developer is going to come along and throw away. And I think, solving the bugs, solving the errors is a big part of that.
Not just solving them, but recognizing them right away. That's a big part of it. And that's why I love TrackJS, is that, that nightly email summary I get of, shit went wrong or, things went really well today. That's really important to me. So, I mean, kudos to you guys. You guys are all doing it full time too, right?
Yep. Now we are. It didn't all used to be that way. We all worked consulting for a long time to, pay mortgages and buy beer and that sort of thing, until TrackJS was big enough and we had enough awesome clients like you who would help us, do this thing full time. The tricky thing about the web specifically is that it's not a static place, right? Like, even if your code is done and you feel like it is as close to bug free as you can get it to be, you're still putting it on the internet where there's all kinds of other people changing things. Like, you, as part of working on Firefox DevTools, are probably going to change something over the next couple of years. You're probably going to change how something behaves. And for some small subset of customers, that's going to break for them. I can say that with pretty high level of confidence because Chrome does it pretty regularly and Safari does it pretty often as well, where things just change behavior, either subtly or drastically, and then a whole bunch of websites break. So you kind of have to always be watching what's happening on the web to know what's going on.
Well, I can tell you with certainty that I will break things. but on the whole, I'm hoping I help to make them better.
I hope so too.
Thanks for sharing that story. I think the ways that we get to where we are just incredible, right? There's no way to draw it up on a map. There's no fairy tale way to get somewhere, right? It's all through hard work. And that, for me, is one of the big takeaways, right? I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I'm not the most talented developer.
Imposter syndrome.
I work really hard. I put in the time to do that. The other thing that sort of got me where I was, I tell everyone to start a blog, right? Not to get a bunch of attention, but to, you know, the best thing that I get from my blog is feedback, where if I post something and someone says, oh, no, there's a better way to do that, like I'm infinitely better for the rest of my career for knowing that that thing. And then the second, the last takeaway for me is put yourself out there, right? Like, don't be afraid to submit a pull request to some project where you don't think it's great, because they're going to help you along. Put yourself out there in the industry when you network. Just put yourself out there, work hard, and good things will happen. Those are my takeaways. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah. So I think what's important to recognize in all of us is that we've all had a different background and a different set of experiences that brought us here. Software development is such an amazing place to be right now, just because there's so few boundaries to get into it. There's rarely a academic requirement. If there is, there's none for like open source or starting your own things. Even when there is an academic requirement, oftentimes it's very loose. And people have moved into this career from all kinds of other backgrounds. Some are just other technical backgrounds. You'll find a lot of like electrical engineers or infrastructure people like me, or mechanical engineers or civil engineers. Sometimes you'll find musicians and poets and English majors who've moved into it. And sometimes it's just people who are like coming up through this latest thing of code schools and are just transitioning a career. And I think all of those other experiences, those other perspectives are really valuable. I think a lot of my personal desire for maintainability in software comes from that infrastructure background. It's because I want, when I set up a server, I want to never have to think about it again unless I want to. And I want the same thing of software. I think all of these different perspectives are really important for us to kind of recognize that we haven't all followed the same path and appreciate the perspectives that we're all bringing to the table.
Absolutely. I think that those perspectives make for better teams. For example, when I joined Mozilla, I was the only team member out of six people who actually went to college for computer science. Like, one was economics, one was music. It was just like, one was philosophy. You know, like that low barrier to get into our industry is so, makes our teams richer. The code you can pick up, right? People can learn how to do that, but it's the perspective, it's the willingness, and it's the empathy that everyone brings that makes teams and organizations stronger. So I think we're going to wrap it there. Todd, we survived episode zero.
Episode zero in the bag.
Of the podcast, the vodcast.
The vodcast. That's a good thing. Maybe we should have a vodka episode. Call it the vodcast.
No, let's not do that. But we really appreciate people listening. If you have constructive feedback, requests, whether it's for us to do something different or a person that you'd like to see with us, we'd love to hear that as well. But again, thank you to everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Peace.
The Script and Style Show is recorded and produced by David Walsh and Todd Gardner. We'll see you next time on Script and Style.